if you think about a Whoop or an Aura, which takes, you know, data from your heart rate, you know, your sleep cycles, or Endel, which, you know, calibrates this data and then figures out what the right sound is to put you in the right mood, to whether it's relax you or get you, you know, ready for a workout. It's pretty impressive how the data is at the center of really improving the human. And that's pretty cool for me.
Budget overruns, brick devices, data breaches. Building connected products is hard. Welcome to Over the Air, sharp, unfiltered conversations with executives about their IoT journeys, the mistakes they made, the lessons they learned, and what they wish they'd known when they started. I'm your host, Ryan Prosser. Welcome back to Over the Air, IoT, Connected Devices, and the Journey. My name is Ryan Prosser, CEO of Veri. Today, we're joined by Vijay Sankaran. We're going to be talking about smart buildings. Vijay, thanks for being on the show.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me, Ryan.
So I think that's the least possible introduction to what is actually going to be, I think, a fascinating discussion today. I enjoyed our pre-interview a lot. For the three people out there in the audience that don't know, Johnson Controls, what do they need to know?
Well, we're all about smart, healthy, and sustainable buildings. We're a 140-year-old company that's in the midst of completely transforming ourselves from being, you know, an industrial company focused on all kinds of equipment and services for buildings to becoming a digital industrial company that's focused on leveraging software as well as our broad product portfolio to create smart, healthy, and sustainable buildings.
I want to talk more about the 140-year history in a minute, but I just realized in the intro, we didn't really describe who you are, but CTO is, you're a big get for us. This is exciting. I know one of the things that you and I share is a passion for biohacking. Talk a little bit about your passion for some of the tech in that area.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I mean, biohacking is something that I've been, you know, thinking about for several years, and especially as more and more devices, you know, like the Whoop and the Aura and Apollo all have come into the marketplace, as well as sound therapy apps like Endel. I always think about, you know, how technology can be used to really monitor and improve people's health, you know, unobtrusively. And so I spent a lot of time. In fact, you know, I think my kids asked me if I was like moving myself towards becoming a cyborg or something like that, you know, and by using all of these different apps. But I mean, I absolutely love data. And what I love about, you know, all of these different devices is how they can potentially impact health positively and mood positively in so many different ways. And, you know, if you think about, you know, a Whoop or an Aura, which takes, you know, data from your heart rate variability, your heart rate, you know, your sleep cycles, or Apollo that focuses on vibration therapy, or Endel, which, you know, calibrates this data from a Whoop or an Aura and then figures out what the right sound is to put you in the right mood, to whether it's relax you or get you, you know, ready for a workout. It's pretty impressive how the data is at the center of really improving the human. And that's pretty cool for me because I'm a data guy and, you know, it's exactly what we're doing for smart buildings. And I always tell people it's all about the data at the end of the day. And so the data about myself, you know, is fascinating. And I'm sure we're just scratching the surface in terms of, you know, what data about humans can do in terms of improving your health and well-being.
Thoughts on Neuralink?
Yeah, it's pretty cool. I mean, you know, I've been following research around remote brain control for years since it was, you know, pioneered at Duke University when I was there back in the early 2000s, and to see how it's evolved to, you know, really have a number of different applications is pretty cool. So I think, you know, brain machine interface is just something that, you know, again, we're at the onset of that journey. But, you know, I wouldn't put anything past the minds of Musk Enterprises and others around being able to come up with new algorithms and, you know, IoT broadly techniques, you know, to fuse those things as we go forward in history.
One of the topics I wanted to ask you about today is the fitness, the biotech space is, it's got some legacy players that feel a little bit boxed into yesterday's technology. I pick on Garmin a lot on the show. I use Garmin, but also they've got BlackBerry vibes to me. You know, that feels very much like they are gonna get replaced by something that doesn't currently exist now. But once it does, it's going to be a wipeout, in my view, at least. Your career has been amazing. You've gone through, you know, several big names in different industries. It seems like you, I don't know, seem to be selecting for companies that are looking to take that leap, become, you know, remodernized. Is this something you're doing intentionally? Can you talk a little bit about this? It seems like you know a thing or two about taking big orcs.
Maybe one could call me a glutton for punishment, right? You know, but, I just happen to love sort of, you know, big, complex transformations. And, you know, I love coming into organizations that have an aspiration to become more digital, understanding where things are at in terms of their, you know, digital evolution, you know, where the competitors are at, where startups are at, you know, my eye from both, you know, the wide array of consumer apps that I use, and then, you know, figuring out what the puzzle needs to look like at the end of the day for a large company to be successful. And then figuring out what pieces you have, what pieces you don't have, what pieces you need to buy, what pieces you need to build, how all the pieces of the puzzle fit together. And then how do you build that, you know, high performance team and culture to really fulfill that digital mission at the end of the day? So I really, you know, just the way that I think, you know, like from a very big, you know, systems thinking perspective, I think is well aligned with these, you know, complex digital transformations, because I just kind of see it in my head as like figuring out this puzzle and continually figuring out what pieces go where. And eventually at some point in time, you know, put the whole puzzle together.
So Johnson Controls, JCI, you know, this is a big name in the smart building industry. 140 years implies this is a company that has reinvented itself a dozen times or whatever it is, you know, and as the pace of the technological innovation, it just keeps accelerating. What does that look like in the role that you're in? I mean, I imagine maybe they were able to go their first 30 years or 50 years and look substantially similar to when they were founded. You know, now it's kind of a reinvention every 10 years or you're dead. That's a lot of reinvention for a company that's got 20,000 employees. What does that look like? Like, what's the promise? What's the peril? What does the job look like for the CTO?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think first and foremost, you know, when I took the job about 2 years ago, you know, I looked at it in terms of, you know, a few different dimensions. Number one, you know, was the purpose. Number two is the people. And the number three is, you know, is there the, you know, the commitment to get it done? And, you know, as I start with purpose, you know, it hadn't dawned on me until, you know, I read Bill Gates's book around, you know, sustainability and decarbonization, that, you know, 40% of all carbon emissions, you know, are generated through buildings, you know, and that's a large percentage of, you know, carbon emissions on a global basis as we think about, you know, ours and our kids' futures. And for me, you know, like a career capstone was really rooted in the fact that I wanted to do something meaningful, you know, around technology and application to these big societal problems, right? And so there was a unique opportunity in the sense, like, I can go in and really build a technology platform in OpenBlue that, you know, decarbonizes all these buildings globally and takes a bite out of that 40% chunk. I mean, you know, what an awesome thing to be, you know, focused on, and also something that can really fuel, you know, our corporate growth. And, you know, the entire team was aligned around that vision. Our CEO, George Oliver, is totally passionate about that. And, you know, he sits on the BRT Council for the president right now and, you know, is really a big advocate for that on a global basis. And so, like, all of that stuff came together. And I think, you know, the company has really found, you know, a clear vision around how it can impact society positively going forward. And so, you know, when you get that North Star for a company, then it becomes a lot easier to get everybody around it. Now, how do you actually get that done? That goes back to your previous question of, you know, figuring out how does it all work within the business, right? And, you know, at Johnson Controls, you know, like you said, we're a large enterprise, you know, got 100,000 employees on a global basis, all over the world. You know, we have, companies, customers who are early adopters of smart buildings, you know, smaller customers who just want to improve energy efficiencies, whether it's in a school or a hospital, you know, a wide variety of different industry verticals. And so figuring out how you build a software platform that's scalable and can adapt to all of those different device types and industries and business models, that's the puzzle at the end of the day. And so it's been fun, you know, like putting that puzzle together. And, you know, we just got off of a, you know, an executive committee meeting where, you know, all the pieces finally feel like they're coming together. So it's really encouraging for me and for what we can accomplish for society.
Let's talk about some of those pieces a little bit. What are some of the products that you're excited about? Later in the show, I'm going to ask you, you know, what's next for you guys? What are you excited about in the future? But looking at the here and now, what are some of the products in that smart building space that address that?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, when you think about being able to solve customer problems and really make IoT and smart buildings real, there are like a few key topical areas that I think are really important to tackle. Number one is you got a lot of different devices, you know, inside of buildings. A lot of buildings are really, really old. So you got different protocols. So how do you connect and ingest data from inside of the building easily and securely send it up to a cloud for further analysis? So we call that kind of, you know, our secure intelligent edge. And so we've, you know, made a lot of progress on that. We've acquired two companies in that space. One is a company called Foghorn in Sunnyvale, California, that we wanted to really bring in some Silicon Valley type talent and AI. And then Tempered Networks up in Seattle is who's a leader in zero trust cybersecurity from edge to cloud, which gives you that military grade encryption from the edge to the cloud, which a lot of customers are looking for, especially in light of, you know, industrial cyber attacks recently. Then there's the digital twin, and which is the, you know, the normalized layer that brings together all of this data and makes it sort of semantically consistent. So, you know, if you really wanted to think about it like a visual image of any building of our customers around the world and basically say, okay, you know, customer X, here are 150 properties that you have, and being able to zoom into any of them virtually and being able to see what equipment, you know, is where and, you know, all of that kind of stuff, that in normalizing that data into a digital twin structure is incredibly important. So that's an area we've invested in heavily. And then there's the AI, you know, which is how do you take all that data, the alerts, the telemetry that comes off of the edge, and then how do you change it from just like a dashboard, which is what a lot of people do, to actual recommendations, which are things like, okay, this room has been unoccupied for the last 6 hours and doesn't look like it's going to be occupied for the next 10. So really, if you reduce the set point in that room by, you know, 2 or 3 degrees, which wouldn't do anything to disrupt its operations, it would save you X amount, you know, in dollars, and reduce your carbon footprint by Y. So, you know, the AI models, whether it's for predictive indicators like my equipment is going to fail, chillers are really big in our space, or it's for space health correlations. I have a lot of people in this room. I want to increase ventilation. So, reduce the risk of pathogen transmission, you know, or even, hey, I'm a technician and, you know, I want to use, an advanced AI search, maybe leveraging a secure form of, you know, ChatGPT or something like that to find out how to service the building. I mean, the AI is extremely powerful in terms of what it can do against the data. And then finally, you know, from my biohacking, you know, experiences, it's got to be super easy for, customers and our techs to use. And so, you know, the user experience is critical. So like, how do you get like indicators? Like we have like what's called a chiller performance index, right? Which is, you know, probably the same as like your daily readiness score on biohacking. It's a simple metric that says, how healthy is my chiller compared to where it was yesterday and compared to other competitors? And so if my, you know, CPI is down, right, I got to go figure out why my CPI is down, because above certain thresholds, it may mean that I have to have that serviced or something like that. And so simplicity around how people consume large amounts of information is really important. You know, you mentioned Garmin, and I think this is what a lot of people struggle with, you know, in this space is, you know, engineers love data. And, you know, so they, a lot of them, you know, build apps like it was meant for an engineer, right? But, you know, the level of sophistication that sometimes it requires to, you know, analyze that data and do something with it, you know, can be very complicated. And so, you know, what we're really aiming for in terms of user experience is to simplify that and make it very actionable and, you know, make it very mobile. And so that, you know, if a tech is out in the field, you know, we can get them an alert, you know, about a customer that is having some sort of distress, and they can triage that and react to it immediately. Those are the near term things that I think are going to take, you know, smart buildings from, you know, just, you know, a pie in the sky idea to really being real. It's got to be affordable. It's got to be scalable. It's got to be easy to use. We've got to be able to accommodate a lot of devices, and it's got to be able to, you know, really be implemented across a wide variety of industries and sizes of organizations for it to really make an impact. So, you know, it's kind of like electric cars. You know, when, you know, we first started with electric cars, you know, you had the Model S and the Model X, you know, that were really fantastic products, but they were for the higher end market. But like, how do you make a mass market, you know, electric vehicle, you know, that's like the Model 3 or even more, more pervasive at a lower cost point? That's exactly what we're doing for smart buildings. You know, we want to make, you know, the smart building and the decarbonization that comes along with it just as accessible to K through 12 schools and small regional hospitals as it is to large multinational corporations.
You mentioned AI. I've told Reese, our producer, before that we should have balloons drop when someone says that's the magic word. It's, you know, it's such a hot space right now that if you stand near it, you're going to get burned. Like, unpack for us, if you're able to, you know, your thoughts on AI, JCI's kind of official stance on it with some things that are happening there. And then on the other side, if you would humor us, are there technologies that you look at and you say, nah, I'm not buying it. I don't see it. I'm not as big of a believer relative to the hype. Blockchain, of course, 5-6 years ago, people were very big on blockchain. It didn't have the use cases. It just didn't. And it was very difficult to implement. You know, it is effective for crypto transactions, and there's a few use cases where it shows some promise. For example, maybe seafood or something, which badly needs a controlled supply chain.
But exactly,
it doesn't have this widespread use case, you know, killer app outcome. Talk to me a little bit about AI. And is there something that VJ's official personal position is, I don't see it, or I don't see it anytime soon?
Yeah, that's a great question. And so what I would say is my official position on AI is that, you know, it's an incredibly powerful enabler in terms of taking large amounts of data and being able to build models that create, you know, probabilistic determination on things that could with a higher probability occur, right? So it's not necessarily like it's definitively gonna happen, right? But, you know, obviously, just like anything in life, you know, as you increase the probability of an event happening based upon the data that you've seen, you know, that's how AI really helps us. And so, for example, you know, chillers, a lot of people don't know anything about chillers, but I mean, chillers really are like the backbone of so many different events and critical environments and data centers, you know, in terms of providing that cooling in many different places. I mean, you know, one of our chiller techs just posted a story on our internal, you know, blog about the Australian Open and, you know, how in 90 degree heat in the indoor arena, our chillers, you know, help keep that arena up and going during some critical matches. And so in that domain, when the chiller is connected, which is a big part of our Open Blue strategy and the data streaming from that, the AI is the intelligent layer that's continually looking at that data, whether it's data from the vibrations on the chiller or data from the signal faults that are coming off of that chiller or multi-correlated you know, events based upon multiple variables that are signaling something about that chiller, right? And so when you get these models that have seen failures before or, you know, excessive vibrations in real time, you know, something bad might happen to that chiller, right? And the last thing you want to see happen, you know, in a critical environment, you know, is that chiller to have downtime, because that once that chiller goes down, that repair could be a fairly extended process. And the, you know, the ability to bring that back up is pretty comprehensive as well. And so the AI is the early warning indicator so that, you know, preemptively at night or something like that, you know, we can say, okay, need to bring that to a graceful shutdown. You know, we need to replace the, you know, the refrigerant or oil on it, you know, to sort of make that more stable, and then, you know, run the models again. And so in my mind, AI is the early detection, and AI can also be the recommendation engine, you know, which looks at different variables and correlates them and said, hey, you should do this differently, right? But I mean, our stance on AI is that AI is, you know, part of the toolkit that, you know, we are giving to our customers in order to run their businesses and buildings more effectively, right? You know, I think over time, you know, we will be able to enable a fully smart autonomous building, but, you know, that's got to be based upon what, you know, what the customer wants, how do they want to use those different recommendations that we provide so that they can do what's best for their constituency, you know, in different conditions. But I would say AI has really, you know, made it a lot easier to proactively and more accurately diagnose, you know, different conditions throughout all parts of society, and buildings are no exception to that.
This is going to be a variation on what I had plan to ask. I promised you some curveballs today to keep you on your toes. You know, you've had this amazing career start to finish. Just, it looks incredible. You've had these very cool stops along the way. Speaking now to somebody in their early 30s that's saying, hey, I'd love to be the CTO of a company like JCI one day. You and I have talked offline about some of the attributes of the person, things they should work on. But it's interesting, you know, hearing you talk about stances and here's my philosophy on this. I, by the way, strongly agree with everything you said. What are some of the things that if you were going to do it over again, you would say, I would really want to be near these technologies. I would want to be learning as much as possible, because wherever I go, that is the path. That looks like the highest probability. Nothing in life's guaranteed. It's about probabilities, but that is a high probability path to success. What are some of those things you look at now?
Yeah, that's a great question, Ryan. And if I were to look back in time, the macro trend that I missed, it, you know, that I kind of intuitively knew sort of in the early 2000s, but I kind of never, you know, shouldered into it or made a, you know, a career switch to get into it, is the whole sort of bio platforms, genetics, genetic analytics, genetic, you know, closed loop usage for like drug discovery and things like that. I think that's an area that like I am just absolutely floored by, just in terms of how platforms plus data creates different approach, novel approaches and solutions to problems, right? So, you know, you saw over the pandemic how, you know, the Moderna or BioNTech mRNA platform just really transformed the rapid discovery of a vaccine to avert, you know, what would have otherwise been, you know, a super global pandemic rather than, you know, a global pandemic, which is bad enough. But look at the combinatorics there. It was effective DNA sequencing, you know, and collaboration and sharing of, you know, the DNA that came from, you know, the COVID, you know, virus, right? Plus the mRNA platform that equated to a solution that was able to create a vaccine in rapid time, right? And so that's a pattern that I've seen sort of emerge in society, right? As like the innovation pattern of like really disruptive innovation, right? I mean, you think about it with like the iPhone, right? It was an increase in the computational power of a cell phone, plus the ability to run, you know, apps that were contextual within that kind of an ecosystem, plus the connectivity, you know, into the internet that had been just developed, you know, 10 to 15 years prior to that, put that combinatorics together, and that has created, you know, the next major technology evolution of you know, society, right? And so bio is the same way. I mean, you look at things like CRISPR, for example, in terms of, you know, genetic editing and sequencing, and then you add, that's another platform that you have there. So you put those platforms together, and that's just really what is game changing, you know, at the end of the day. I see the same thing happening in the sustainability space, which is what's really, really exciting to me is, you know, you look at, you know, these platforms with the data collection from buildings, plus, you know, the improved carbon, you know, capture and storage type mechanisms, plus, you know, the advances around solar and other renewables, plus, you know, things like grid interactive optimization, where you can use software to optimize on-site power generation, plus, you know, more of a distributed collective of renewable energy, right? Again, those same platforms are beginning to emerge in the sustainability space, which is something I find fascinating and hope to spend, you know, the majority of the rest of my career, you know, focused on those kinds of problems.
You mentioned Apple and the iPhone. You know, we're now 16 years removed from, or I guess this fall would be 16 years since the first iPhone. I don't think the App Store came until iPhone 2, but whatever, it all feels like it was bang, bang, like, you know, it happened so fast. And it's amazing to look at any phone that predates the iPhone and, it, you know, instantly irrelevant, you know, with the walled garden approach to what was, they weren't really calling them apps, but like the applications within the phone, totally walled garden. And, you know, the Apple iPhone just, you know, totally changed it. Thinking about JCI now, talk to us about the future. Like, what are you excited about? I mean, you've talked a little bit about some of the things you're excited about. As the calendar rolls on to 24, 25 and beyond, what are some of the things you guys are working hard on that we might see that you're really excited about?
Yeah. So, I mean, I think number one is this notion of a fully smart autonomous building is something that's like super exciting for me. And coming from the automotive industry, you know, where, you know, we've been talking about autonomous vehicles for well over a decade now, you know, you could call that my trough of discontent in terms of whether we'll ever truly get to fully autonomous vehicles. But, you know, on the flip side of that, I truly believe that, you know, autonomous buildings are within our reach because buildings don't move, fortunately. And so, you know, being able to connect the buildings, get all that data, being able to adapt dynamically in real time, you know, being able to sense and respond with occupants inside of a building, being able to vary the air quality in terms of that I mean, that is definitely, you know, within our reach within the next 5 years. And so that's like super exciting for me, you know, like for ourselves at Johnson Controls, you know, to be a showcase of having a fully smart autonomous building. You know, I was just there in Ireland last week in our one of our headquarter locations in Cork. And I said, you know, this would be a great building to make fully autonomous, you know, in the next few years here. And so that's super exciting for me. The second exciting thing for me is just what I'm seeing in the evolution of decarbonization in buildings, right? You know, and what I love about decarbonization in buildings, maybe versus other industries, is that it's typically a win-win between saving money and, you know, really creating a reduction of carbon emissions. And, you know, especially with energy prices being as high as they are right now in different parts of the world based upon, you know, geopolitical events, it is a perfect time. And I love the incentives that governments are putting in place to say, hey, this is a time where you can be more energy efficient, you can be more green. I mean, take things like heat pumps, for example, and, you know, just the proliferation of, you know, adoption around heat pumps in places like Europe, you know, where it's much more energy efficient, much greener than your traditional boilers. And, you know, the timing is right. And I always feel like, you know, the biggest opportunities exist, you know, where timing is right, platforms are right, you know, you can drive the right connectivity for optimization. So, you know, all the things that we can do, both based upon our product technologies as well as our data technologies, you know, with sustainability is super exciting for me. And like I said, you know, with AI, while we've done some interesting things, you know, we are just scratching the surface, you know. So, you know, we believe that the more data that we can get about different aspects of the building ecosystem, you know, the more that we can do in terms of, you know, helping companies and people around different issues that, you know, exist with buildings, right?
Great segue. So, you know, this is, you have a giant profile in this industry. So let's play kingmaker here a little bit. Who's doing great work in the commercial IoT world that you think not enough people are talking about?
Well, there's a couple of customers, you know, of ours that I truly definitely want to give, you know, a little shout out to. You know, Derwin is a real estate portfolio company in the UK that we've been working with for some years. And I'm just truly blown away by their commitment to creating smart and sustainable, healthy portfolio. And, you know, Capital Land is another customer in the Asia Pacific region that, you know, they have been pioneers on this idea of how do we make our buildings more efficient. And so I love, you know, people who have this vision that, you know, as part of their business, they want to make, you know, really smart, sustainable, you know, buildings and really are pioneering concepts around that. You know, they happen to be using our platforms, but they're just real absolute pioneers in that space. You know, obviously, you know, everybody talks about, you know, the Elon enterprises, you know, of IoTs. And, you know, when I visited the Gigafactory back in 2016 in Fremont, you know, I was blown away by, you know, the level of automation, the level of, you know, sophistication on those products. You know, I've been a Tesla owner for, you know, coming up now on 5 years. And, you know, just to see the way that Tesla thinks about, you know, the vehicle coming from the vehicle industry, where it's the software is the platform. And then the electromechanical flows around the platform. But the software is the heartbeat of the way that, you know, the IoT ecosystem works inside of that vehicle. That's a completely different paradigm than everybody else has done, right? And it's very difficult to catch up to that, right? And then looking at it from a complete systems view around how does that you know, connect into the power wall? How does it connect into, you know, the solar ecosystem? That's a pretty compelling vision when you think about that complete closed loop, you know, system. There's also a lot of really interesting companies, I think, in medical devices that are really pioneering things around, you know, microcomputing techniques with, you know, different types of condition assessment, you know, swallowable diagnostics and things like that, early detection systems. You know, I don't, you know, I can't pinpoint one because they're in a constant state of, you know, acquisition by larger enterprises to remember which ones, you know, are standalone and which ones are part of a larger enterprise. But that's an area also that I see incredible amounts of, you know, innovation in. And so those are some that I'm just, you know, super, you know, impressed by the progress in a variety of different spaces. But, you know, as you know, Ryan, with innovation, we'll see companies emerge and grow and morph more quickly than ever in this day and age. And so, you know, I'm sure we'll see that next pioneer, you know, come up, you know, shortly as you know, our economic conditions normalize a little bit.
Yeah, two topics we didn't get to today. We're at time. Number one, you and I share a passion for space, and we didn't touch on that at all. So we'd love to have you back on the show and go deep on that.
Well, space is the final frontier. And, you know, I must have exhausted that topic at dinner last night because I was in a heated debate around space with somebody, which I really enjoyed.
For me, it's the coolest thing possible. You know, I love it as a topic. I love it as an industry, a growth industry. This is no longer just government funded. You know, there is now industry being built around it, which I think is really fascinating.
Well, we'll have to have the Star Trek versus Star Wars debate next time, you know.
So I would welcome that opportunity. And the other thing I want to ask you about the next time that we're lucky enough to get you on the show is, you know, you mentioned Tesla, and it is very much technology first, and then everything is built around that. And it seems to me, now we don't have time to get into it today, so this is foreshadowing the next episode, the next time we get Vijay on the show, but it seems that is a very hard thing to replicate for companies that are not built on a technology first platform, whether it be automotive or any industry. I suspect that you know a thing or two about this, and I'd like to hear your thoughts the next time that we can get you on the show. Would you be willing to muse on that a little bit?
I would love to. And, you know, you and I share a word, which is platform. And that is where it's, you know, the differentiators are all about platforms first. And so let's talk about that.
Great. Until next time, Vijay, thank you so much for being on the show.
Thanks so much, Ryan. I really enjoyed it, and look forward to the next connection point.
And thank you for listening. Join us next time as we talk with another IoT executive about what went wrong on a journey that went right. Over the Air is brought to you by Very. To find out more about us, head over to verytechnology.com. And to ensure you never miss an episode, don't forget to subscribe in Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever great podcasts are found. And as always, 5-star reviews are greatly appreciated.